everyone. I'd like to convene the May 14th, 2013 session of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. We're in session. Good morning to each of you. Just so that you know, the state police have asked us to keep the room under control. Everybody's seated. We're expecting an overflow crowd this morning for the Sheep Commission bill. So please make room for the all of the press that will be in attendance. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 357. And welcome, Senator Roblin and Brett Brownskin, please. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Welcome to our committee.
Yes, it's great to be here.
Nice to have you here.
And for the record, Arnie Roblin, State Senator, District 5, from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay, Indiana. And I'm here to talk about Senate Bill 357. And again, we had a number of bills over in the House that had to do with trying to figure out and how to solve some of the problems that exist out there with respect to harvesting timber and making sure that we keep the environment and do things that are appropriate. And as we were having conversations, we realized that there was an issue that kept coming up, and that is the cooperatives that we have going on the east side seem to be working. There's a group that's trying to start a new collaborative down in the Port Orford, Gold Beach, Southern Oregon region. We have one that's happening in Ashland that seems to have done some work, but it took a long time to get there. And we had a number of county judges, i.e. county commissioners, come over and talk to us about they would really like to make the collaboratives work faster. And the federal government doesn't have the money to do that, so they wanted to invest in it. And what they found was when they tried to invest, they couldn't get their investment back. The government could take the money and do the work, but then when they got the money back, they couldn't pay them back. There was no way to do that. So we've talked to the federal delegation. We've tried a lot of other things to try to figure out how we get the money back, and we were not having a lot of success with that one. So we thought, are there other ways in which we can invest and get a rotating fund to get going that would allow us to treat a whole lot more area and also have a real conversation about treating areas in which we actually can extract saw logs, because that's where you get money back from the area. At the same time, we're doing the work in the area. And so in those conversations and with a number of different people, and the governor's office was involved, and we had people from all over the country. Actually, there's a Western States group that has funding that can do some stuff. We brought together a large group to talk about that. And what came out of that was this bill, basically. And I talked to Senator George and said, "Do you mind if I steal your bill?" And we put in another deal. He said that would be fine. And we talked to different people to say, here's the concept is that we have our Department of Forestry already has a work group that's working on some of these kinds of issues. And we wanted to make sure that we specifically talked about the kinds of things that we thought showed some potential to develop the kind of money we need to have in a rotating fund. And one of that was, if the Forest Service were actually the person that did the bid to do some of the work, then they would get paid for that, and then that money could be used then to recycle into the next one. Another option was on my committee, it got her head up, was Jenny Burdick doesn't particularly like the idea of, what's it called, where you take, if we can create the jobs and we make sure we get the jobs, then they provide income tax that wasn't coming in, and we take that income tax and put it back in. And so we looked at that as an option. So we put that in here. We put everything that we talked about, and including all the different groups who could manage the fund, and they're all listed here, and said, okay, forestry, we would like you. In fact, we're going to direct you to have a conversation about this and see if there's ways that we can work with the counties, because some of the counties have a little extra money they would like to do this with, because if they can get the saw logs and the other stuff, they can keep their mill going, it can keep the economy going over there. And if they can find a way to get money back so they can then reinvest it and keep that going, so we'll get a lot more, because at the rate the federal government's going, we will never catch up with the fire danger on the east side. We won't get close. And what happens is we have fires like we had in Southern Oregon a year ago, in which they show that they reduced the fire load because they let the fire burn forever. And that is not the solution that I think anybody feels is the right solution for managing these lands on the east side in particular. And we're going to have another bad year fire-wise. We've already know we got drought situation on almost the whole east side, and that puts a bigger burden on all of us with respect to fire season. The more we can do to get that stuff down ahead of time, the more fire can come through and burn without taking out the trees. And I encourage you to do this. We checked with the governor's office and the Forest Service and the and our forestry department, and since they already have a group going, this just gives them some more direction. It wasn't going to cost anything, and that's why for once you see a study that doesn't cost anything, and therefore they're going to do this as part of their ongoing business. And they were, my feeling was that they were happy to get the extra impetus for a group that was already working. So with that, I would gladly answer any questions, and we'll let Brett say anything else that he wants to say.
Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Witt, members of the committee, Brett Brownscombe for the record with Governor Kitzhaber's office. So I'm here to just give you a bit of background. I've been on behalf of the governor convening or staffing the Federal Forest Advisory Committee since I've been on the job here, and a lot of what Senator Roblin just spoke about, when the bill reads the State Board of Forestry shall appoint advisory committee, we're talking about that Federal Forest Advisory Committee as kind of the assembled body of county industry, conservation, community sustainability interest that would do the work in this bill. This initially stems from that Federal Forest Advisory Committee was the group that worked on recommendations that eventually became rolled into the governor's budget proposal on dry side or east side federal forest health. There's a longer term issue, that budget proposal, if it gets favorable review by the legislature, is still a biennial budget proposal, and there's still a long-term problem looming with forest health, whether it be from fire or other impacts, community health, and then economic health and resilience of mill infrastructure and community infrastructure. And so Senate Bill 257, as it existed, would have set up a loan fund to try to deal with a new way for there were some counties that had road funds, and or the state potentially could invest in a loan fund, that the idea was that money would then be repaid based on the revenues from federal timber sales. So you'd create that revolving situation that Senator Roblin discussed. It became clear Senator Roblin and Senator Barrett Sugar pulled together a work group of interest to try to see if we can break through a federal obstacle that exists in federal law related to how budgeting is done in Congress about the inability of that loan fund to work right now. The work group met. We met several times. The conclusion of that work group became pretty clear that we needed some more time to see if there were other means to breaking through the obstacles on how to get this kind of revolving fund going. And there was also interest on behalf of a variety of constituents on the other items in this section one of this bill, which is approaches to diversifying revenue for work on increasing the pace and scale of management on federal ground. And then on the other end of this, decreasing costs and finding efficiencies, which is important to a lot of folks, including especially the industry interests in this, who view this as, look, this is not all about finding more money. This is about finding efficiencies as well and how the Forest Service does its planning. And so Senator Bettschiger and Senator Roblin expressed a real desire to see this effort continue and for the legislature to have a specific role in staying engaged in this federal forest issue. And the Federal Forest Advisory Committee is certainly committed to staying together and continuing to work on this. And I think when it's safe to say, when the legislature through Senator Bettschiger and Senator Roblin said to us, we want, you know, we have some specific direction and we want folks who have aptitude and wherewithal to work on this with some good thinking to do this and get back to us in a year, we said we'd welcome that direction. So I'll leave it at that and take any questions. I think the Department of Forestry is also here to, if there are any questions specific to the department, given that the bill mentions the Board of Forestry and the department's been closely engaged in the Federal Forest Advisory Committee. So thank you for the opportunity, and thank you to Senator Roblin and Senator Bearsugar as well for the leadership on this.
Thank you very much. Representative Whitsitt, followed by Representative Krieger.
Do you know if the appointed group will be consensus-driven or Democratic-driven? Does everyone have to agree on the recommendations, or will it be by a vote for the recommendations?
Chair Witt, Senator Whitsitt, or Representative Whitsitt. No, so it's not a the way the Federal Forest Advisory Committee works is we try to come up with some consensus recommendations, but to the extent that doesn't happen and there's a good idea that some people feel should move forward but maybe others don't, that would be advanced with the caveat. So if there was a recommendation to come back to this body next year, there would be recognition of, you know, if not everybody on the Federal Forest Advisory Committee is on board with an idea, but you're still hearing about it, that would be disclosed. But it wouldn't be an obstacle to advancing ideas. We'd strive for consensus, but there's no, I hear what you're saying about let's not let things get paralyzed.
Thank you.
Representative Krieger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess for either one of you, you know, we've dealt with the forestry issues in our rural communities now for since long before I got here 14 years ago. Coos Bay has been devastated by lack of forest management on the federal grounds, and you see what's happening on the 18 timber-dependent counties. And I read this, the advisory committee, fine, increased pace and scale. I'm not certain what that means. And then you talk about federal forest management projects. Almost everything that's come forward that I've seen in the last 20-some years has all been around forest health prescriptions about reducing fire potential, disease potential, and it's fine to go in and do that. But at some point, that's done, and you still have a forest. And it's that forest that's left for that 30, 40, 50, 60 years that at some point needs to contribute to the economy by being harvested. Now, not all forest ground lends itself to forest management and harvest. There are special sites, high-risk sites, and special sites of value, and we recognize that. And the chair and I, we were on the Board of Forestry doing the Northwest Forest Plan for the Clatsop and Tillamook, took all those things into consideration. But it would seem, I don't see an emphasis of eventually understanding that large mature trees are going to end up on every acre eventually if we take care of it, and what are we going to do with them?
I would say that I agree. We, and we're actually going to have a long conversation about that, because that's the saw timber we need to have for our mills if we keep the infrastructure going. And I guess where it's embedded in here is that over time we're going to figure out what it takes to keep those mills viable on the east side, because right now we're getting to the point where the east side is close to what happened in Colorado and some of these other places. We've lost all the infrastructure. And in fact, when we had the big disease in the southern part of the state, there were no mills left. So there was no way to get that out of there, which would have been helpful both for the environment and to stop the disease. So we understand clearly that when the pine beetles there, the pine beetles don't fly, they drop from one tree to the other. When you have too much crowding, it creates this dead forest. And if we had gotten it out like we did in the upper pass 20 years ago, when we actually took it all out as quickly as we did, we arrested that disease. We've talked to people, the group that, what's the group that was in the Barry Point fire? What's the timber company?
Collins Pine.
Collins Pine lost about 25% of their stock in this last fire, which makes it really hard for them to do the renewable forest that they wanted, because that was part of the plan. And we talked to the person who was over there. They actually were the last to actually build a small milling situation and move it out to those places so they could, and they took as much as anybody took out of the dead pine forest. We have to recognize that if we get a forest that's growing, and knowing that we want to regenerate that forest, that we're going to have to take the big trees out. When they get too old, they're dead anyway, and they're going to be a fire hazard. So I hope that we can have that conversation. And one of the things that we talked about a lot in our subcommittees was, even as we do this cleaning of the forest, getting it more fire resistant, we need to take out
saw logs. People need to understand that's part of the process, because you won't keep any infrastructure if you don't. And so I think that's that. How do we get an infrastructure that's appropriate on the east side to manage the timber over the long haul throughout the place? Because right now we have vast areas of the east side that have no infrastructure, and therefore we aren't going to be harvesting it because there's no way to harvest it. The transportation of the product to the mills is too far, so you aren't going to make it happen. So I agree with you. I think we both agree. It's trying to figure out what that looks like. And, you know, in talking to the Collins people and some of the others, there are ways to make some small sawmills that you can take out to a site and chop and move, and they're trying to get more efficient at doing that kind of stuff, and hopefully we'll have those kind of decisions and discussions too.
Follow up?
Please.
There's always going to be a concern from certain groups, and I understand that, and I think we can accommodate.
I agree.
The main one is water quality for fish, in my mind. We're all understanding the value of wild fish more and more. You and I have got a bill that we're concerned about.
Yep.
Regarding that issue. It would seem like this group needs to reach out and have a conversation with some of the people in the environmental community, you know, Native Fish Society, Oregon Trout, whoever who it might be, and have another conversation besides the ones we've had. How can we accommodate those values, and what do you see that we're missing? You know, I probably look at how I look at the forest today compared to when I got to Gold Beach in 64. It's different.
Yep.
It's different because of forest management prescriptions, adaptive management, science. We need to apply that and look for solutions, because I think it's doable.
Yeah, and I think those people are on the committee. So, I mean, all those different viewpoints are there. And that's why we understand that we will get some recommendations back that don't come with the full authority of the whole board. They will come with a majority or whatever, say, here's something else you should look at. And that was a very good question, because that's important for us to see all those different deals, because some places they want to agree. Other places you may get to more consensus, and I agree that the only way we're going to get there is to talk to each other and have those conversations. So I thank you for that, too.
Sure. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been very disturbing. I've been in Oregon all my life, and to see what's happened 40, 50 years ago versus what's going on today, I see a forest that is unkept. I see a forest that is a tinderbox. I see a forest that, if it were managed correctly, would grow vibrantly, and it would provide an economic engine for this area. There's only two things in the state that we have that's renewable, that's a natural resource. One's water, and the other one's timber. And like my colleague, my former colleague, Mike Chopper, always said, money does grow on trees in this state.
That's true.
We just have to capitalize on it. And we have to use that in a manner similar to a wheat crop. You plant it, you cultivate it, you weed it, you make sure that it's good, you harvest it, and then you replant it, and you do it again. And that's what we need to do in this state, but we can't seem to get through. I mean, I can think of some things. I remember when I was managing Tomco Incorporated, when I was the general manager there, we had a logger that cut four trees outside of the timber sale. We had three people for 4 hours up there scaling four trees. That kind of approach doesn't get it. It just doesn't get it. And that's the thing that we need to key in on. We need to have some sort of a say in our management of our forest, even though the federal government lays claim to it. So I don't know how we can get there, but if I encourage in any way possible, we can do that. And I've been thinking about when I was a kid growing up that I saw, you know, log trucks all the time. I saw mills like Kogap, it's gone. Double D, it's gone. Boise Cascade or Olson & Lawyer, gone. SWF, it's gone. Perimeter, it's gone. Cheney Studs, it's gone. I mean, I can name you 10 mills that used to be there that are all gone because of lack of timber. And what we can do is we can do set asides into the creeks and the rivers, and we can do set asides, and we can do quite well. But you know, as long as we let the tail wag the dog, we're going to be in the same situation 20 years from now we are today. And I applaud what you're doing.
Yeah, and what I said to that, I actually think that we have to figure out different ways to work with the federal government to get those things that we believe are in to happen. This is one of those to do with timber. You know, the Coastal Caucus is working with federal government in ways we never thought we'd have to do with respect to dredging. And yet, we are looking for solutions to our issues as opposed to just letting it go. And this, I believe, is one more time when we're looking for solutions to show the federal government if they do things, and maybe it'll change their policies over time when they see that it can be done right. So that's my goal.
Representative Reardon.
Thank you. This looks really great. Just I'm fairly new to the process and trying to learn more. So assuming all of this goes well and we have a good study, when would we expect to see more logs hitting mills?
You know, my guess is that if this process keeps going and we can find a method where counties feel comfortable that their money can be recycled and relocate and keep doing it, that counties in Eastern Oregon are ready to spend the money now. They have it set aside. They want to do it. If we get the, if this budget happens the way the governor's office put it in, there's going to be some money for this loan to do a similar kind of thing. Again, we need to make sure that we feel comfortable that we're going to get our loan back in some way. And it's going to have to be different than having the government pay us back, because that isn't going to happen. So this stuff lets that stuff happen, and I would hope that if we can figure out some of these mechanisms that work, whether it's our forestry department going in and doing doing the work, and therefore getting paid by the federal government for the work they're doing, which can then be put back in it. However we do that, my hope is we would get to be able to do it get up after this fire season and get back into the woods again. But I can't tell you exactly when that would happen.
Yeah. And Chair Witt, Representative Reardon, if I may, if the governor's budget, if it moves forward, among the performance measures and metrics in that budget, which have been worked on with a variety of interests, is clear measurement within the two-year budget time frame of, are we seeing an increase in saw log volume either under contract or committed in the project pipeline at the end of those 2 years? It may not all be cut by the end of those 2 years, but there's a clear intention to monitor whether we've got more under contract now as a result of this budget initiative than others. Separate from that, and on this Senate Bill 357, I mean, this is really getting back to what Representative Esquivel got to, which is, can the legislature and interests that the legislature represents drive forward state-based solutions and recommendations that are pragmatic and effective at getting to that pace and scale increase through this loan fund, revolving loan fund concept, or diversifying revenues, or driving down inefficiencies like the one that you mentioned, Representative. It's not to say there's not a need for additional work in Congress on federal forest issues. I think everybody on the Federal Forest Advisory Committee recognizes there is, but I think there's also a real belief that we can recommend some things at the state level and push the federal government in a way that could actually be effective.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I'm just really pleased that you're here today, and thank you for your good work on this, and we'll thank Senator George. We've been hamstrung for a very long time, and we all know that our communities are suffering mightily. We know that our forest health has been at risk for a long time, and we've had devastating effects from that, and it's really nice to see what I'm going to call a collaborative approach to try and solve this, even if it's on a fairly small scale. Hopefully it can grow into a bigger scale. Seeing what's going on the dry side is great. I would love to see that replicated over here on the west side at some point, to continue to see that supply of logs come through our mills. We all know how devastating this has been for the last 25 years for our rural communities, and what we have been doing isn't working. So I'm really excited about seeing this come, and I'm very supportive of this concept. I think there is a balance we can strike here between these entities. If people will come to the table and sit down and talk to each other and try and figure out how we can try and restore our economic health and our forest health and continue to see some economic vitality return, and I'm just delighted that you're on track and have brought this. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I would mirror Vice Chair McEwen's comments. It has every appearance that the federal government is paralyzed in terms of its ability to be able to manage the forests. And it's clearly up to our state to be able to drive an agenda that will make forest management possible once again. I want to call up the department here in a minute to give us a quick, concise overview of the recommendations from the Federal Forest Land Advisory Committee so that we can get a handle on kind of what that vision is. But I'm curious for the two of you, what is your feel for the receptiveness of the federal government for our state to be making these kind of recommendations and to be having these expectations that our partner do their uphold their fair share of the bargain to manage forests here in this state for the benefit of our state?
We had some both retired and other federal forest managers from the east side come over and be a part of our work group, and I would tell you that they are very supportive. Those people who are out there in BLM and Forest Service who are professional managers of the forest recognize that they have a problem, and they would love to do a lot more. I mean, they have put out what they would like to do, and then they get what they get from Congress, what they can do, and they know the discrepancy. So, you know, and we had the Nature Conservancy's others there doing exactly the same thing, saying, you know, we know it's a real problem, especially the east side stuff. We're having conversations. There's one down in Ashland that's going now collaborative as well. But everybody is in agreement that the problem exists. And those foresters were really helpful with us. I thought the federal people who came to our work group were very helpful. I mean, they didn't give us the answer we wanted with regard to could we have a revolving fund. I mean, they were pretty clear on that. But they were very appreciative of the idea that we could figure out a way that we could collaboratively do this.
And Chair Witt, just to build on what Senator Roblin said, I have a letter from, I'll be sure to share it with the committee, from Regional Forester Ken Connaughton. It's tied to the government's budget proposal, but the sense that we've gotten is the region knows that the problem is here. I mean, nobody is denying that we have problems, whether it be the social, the economic, or the environmental end. They all want to do something about it. They point to, here's what we get from Congress every year, here are our appropriated dollars, and the need far outstrips the supply. So when efforts like this and the governor's budget proposal were advanced, the reception we got was positive. I mean, it was, you know, this is the kind of partnership that we would like to see. If there were actually in this letter that I'll be sure committee members have, recognition that, you know, without some impetus from the state's end, it's harder for the regional office to push things up the food chain into the federal end. And so with the push from the state's end, they've acknowledged they've been able to do things and have conversations about a new opportunity that they, you know, maybe didn't have the space to do before. And I think they know Senator Roblin and, well, Senator Bertschinger, he's contracted with the Forest Service before in his life, and he knows their sandbox, and they know that. And so I think they recognize that within this building there's some leadership that speak from a very pragmatic and informed point of view.
That's very true.
I think that's very encouraging, and I think it's an opportunity here once again for Oregon to show leadership and perhaps a better way. And I think if we are successful, other states may be inclined to want to follow our lead once again, and maybe we can have a shot in the arm for the entire forest products industry. Vice Chair McEwen.
Thank you, sir. Just a follow-up. When we're talking about counties who have the wherewithal and the means to put some money into this project, how much of a disadvantage will it be for those counties who are really struggling, who don't have the means to contribute to a project like this? Has that been discussed? we all know who they are.
But I would say that that's part of why we think it's important for the governor's budget to get passed, because it's not asking for the counties. The counties came to us because they had, and they've been trying to do it, and they've actually had some success on the east side with some of the money they had. But I think what the governor's budget is about doing the same thing, using that money repeatedly, but they're not constrained by the counties having the money. That's the part of the governor's budget, and they would like to be able to do that as well. And that's why these are separate, but they are actually looking at the same issue, and I would encourage both of them to move forward.
Thank you.
Thanks. Anything further? Well, gentlemen, thank you very, very much. I think you can tell by the level of discussion that we've had here that this committee has a great interest in the sustainability of our federal forests, all of our forests. But clearly, it's not the lack of federal management is impeding forest sustainability in our state, and we'd like to get that fixed as soon as possible. And please share on the Senate side this committee's high level interest and appreciation for this bill.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, if I could just ask the department to come forward and briefly share with us what some of the recommendations are from the Federal Forest Lands Advisory Committee, so that we kind of have a context in which to better understand maybe where this bill may take us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kevin Birch. I'm Director of Forest Resources Planning for the Oregon Department of Forestry. So you're asking for something that's way back in the archives here, and I'll give it, see if I can give you a short synopsis of the process that we've gone through. This has been a long journey with the Federal Forest Advisory Committee and then an implementation work group. And it really started with Governor Kulongoski coming to the Board of Forestry and saying, we want a vision, an Oregon vision, for how we should use federal forest lands. We put together a blue ribbon committee that included the Board of Forestry, the EQC, the Fish and Wildlife Commission, the counties, the industry on both sides of the state, the environmental groups, and Bill Cluden for labor, and a retired forest supervisor to give us kind of the inside track. A very, very knowledgeable group. We really talked through, we spent a lot of discussion, spent a two-year process, you know, talking through the problems that you've been discussing here today. You know, things, the problems of place where we've got overstocked forests, where we're losing our timber supply and it's having impacts on local communities. We also talked about process problems, that we have a lack of trust out there. That is a big issue between, you know, us being able to get something different on federal lands. You know, talked about having a number of laws that are maybe conflicting or overlapping and very difficult for the federal government to work through. We came up with a recognition on that group that this wasn't something you could solve just at the federal level or just at the local level, that it really needed both of us kind of working together. And that original advisory committee suggested several things for state and local involvement. Among those was supporting local collaborative groups, having the state have a way to provide some support to kind of get some agreement and look at how can we manage and what can we actually agree on to move forward with. And that's a big part of what the implementation work group, the subsequent work group that Brett chairs, you know, has kind of been working on. We came in 2009, I think, wrong budget time to be asking for something, and we were talking about, well, can we come up with maybe a state program that would assist the federal government in doing some of this kind of stuff. It was a traditional model. It really didn't fly. We've come back this session with the governor's support and the things that the governor is talking about in his budget as a way to really provide that local support. We recognize that we don't have what we want off of the federal ground, and we're really looking for tools in the toolbox. And certainly the governor's budget has some tools in the toolbox. It's got a different way, a new business model of working with the federal government. And this bill kind of provides another tool in the toolbox, if you will, a way to kind of allow us maybe to develop some sort of loan program. So we're very supportive of the concept of trying to add tools to the toolbox. We've been working on it for several years. I'll be real honest with you, candid, this makes us nervous saying, you know, go to the Department of Forestry and us saying, you know, no, this really doesn't have a cost. We're really relying on that larger work group, that implementation work group, you know, that has the other state agencies, has the federal agencies at the table, has the NGOs at the table, all to be able to come up with ideas and discussions and report back to you in 6 months, here are some options that we might be able to use. So with their help, I think that we can deliver this, you know, sort of within budget and hopefully in a timely way. Is that more than you ever wanted to know, Mr. Chair?
That's perfect, Kevin. Thank you very, very much. Any questions or comments for Mr. Burrich? Yes, Representative Krieger, please.
It's all well and good. We want to make sure the forest is, to some extent, preserved, but utilized, take care of all the resources. But it takes one environmentalist in New York to file a complaint and to stop the whole thing, no matter what you prescribe. So until you deal with the Endangered Species Act and who has standing to sue, we can go through this process for another 30 years and nothing's going to change.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, you know, you're hitting on exactly one of the points that the original committee looked at. We have a number of overlapping laws. The report actually asked for some pieces of legislation, three pieces of legislation, and I would really agree with you that this is not just a local thing that we can solve by ourselves. It really does need both the national and the local, you know, working together to be able to solve these kinds of issues. What we recommended out of that committee was a bill similar to the Farm Bill, have a forest bill, like the Farm Bill or the Energy Bill, where you would be able to set goals, you would be able to look for obstacles that were in, you know, opposition to you being able to achieve those goals and actually put money behind it. That was something that the Western Governors Association was very supportive of, and it really hasn't flown. And I don't know what's on the schedule for Congress, but, you know, Congress, while we've got some ideas and we're supportive of legislation going forward, we don't really want to wait on that either. You know, we're not happy with what's happened in the last 25 years, and we're looking for ways, basically any good ideas that we can find at the local level to help move that conversation along. And I think if we get some skin in the game, if you will, the more we get involved in this, the more leverage we're going to have on Congress to say, you know, look, here's the obstacles, and we need your help. So that's kind of where we've been at with this.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another thing that comes to my mind, and I don't know, we'll probably never get this fixed, is when the environmental community files suit against the federal government takes taxpayers' money and pays them. And we've actually created people in businesses because they've done quite well by suing us, the taxpayers, about our forests. And I think that's something that we need to look at. Whereas if that were under the jurisdiction and the management of the state of Oregon, my understanding is when they sued the state of Oregon, they would not be reimbursed. So we have some options if we can get cooperation with the federal government.
Representative Clem.
Mr. Chair, I might just urge us to move along.
All right.
My temper about timber issues makes Representative Schaufler's look very tame, and I feel it's starting to boil up here.
Representative Thompson, I have to hold you down.
So I just think maybe We need to talk about sheep or something.
I think,
talk about sheep.
Representative Clem, I think the saying was something along the lines of cut some timber, pour some concrete, and tie some steel.
I'm mostly into the timber part, of course. But,
all right, very good. I just want to share an interesting experience with the committee that I have had recently within the past couple of weeks. It used to be fairly common for the timber industry to be criticized for cutting old growth timber, and most recently at a dinner, the speaker was being critical of the industry cutting young trees and not allowing them to grow to maturity. So I thought that was an interesting spin on the state of affairs in the timber industry. In any event, Kevin, I hope I didn't catch you too off guard by calling you up here, and certainly appreciate very much the background here that you've provided us. Thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, is there anyone else that would like to testify this morning on Senate Bill 357? Bill Kluding, come on forward, please. Please don't wind up Representative Clem too tight here now, Bill.
Yeah, he's going to, I know.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Vice Chair Jim Esquivel, for the record, Bill Kluding, Carpenters and Joiners. I'd be remiss if I didn't walk up and testify on this bill. It's a good bill. It's a start. But I ask myself, how many times are we going to start? I appreciate the governor stepping forward this time. I appreciate the three congressmen that stepped forward. I wish the other two would step forward. I wish our two senators would join our three congressmen and sit down and draw out something that would work. But it was briefly touched on, and what everybody avoids this, but our main problem is, until the Supreme Court rules that there will be no environmental appeals, after the U.S. Forest Service or the BLM, they use their biologists, they use their top grade people, and when they put a sale online, until the law says there will be no appeal, we will be in this boat forever. Will we ever get there? I doubt it. Right now, we can't even control our own state's timber program. We allowed the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and others to come into the Elliott Forest and spend almost a decade. And as you well know, we have lost the ability to log anywhere in the Elliott Forest. Look at the jobs. Look at the money we're going to generate. Up to 45 million board feet was supposed to come out of that forest. This year, we haven't felled one tree. In fact, Oregon Department of Forestry had to lay off 7 people. It's a crying shame. U.S. Forest Service has a hard time making sure that they hire local American workers to do their projects. We're having a heck of a time. We're working on it. We've got a bill coming through 3315. But the U.S. Department of Labor and the U.S. Forest Service do not associate with each other. And we wind up with foreign workers coming into this state. Mm-hmm. I want to thank Representative Crager for the two bills that we're trying to get through the Senate now. And if you notice in the press, and And even during the hearings in the House side judicial, these radical people said, we don't care what you do in here, we'll just go underground. They've already stated in the newspapers they can't wait. They can't, if they can't stall it in the Senate, they can't wait for it to get in the courtroom. If Oregon loses its timber, there's 600,000 acres of state timberland in that coast range. But getting back to the federal, if you notice, just recently, a federal judge stepped in and stopped a timber sale that they spent a long, long time putting together. And what he said, what you've done isn't good enough. The environmental impact study wasn't good enough. What he's making these people do now is get down on their hands and knees and looking for salamanders, mold, you name it. It's not the spotted owl. It's not whatever they want to pick. He's got them down on their hands and knees looking for stuff now. Chair Witt, committee, we can't allow this to go on. How crippled can we put this state? The state's on its knees. Rural Oregon is ruined.
Go out on a logging road.
Will we ever bring it back? I don't see how. Until the administration, the Supreme Court steps in and says enough's enough. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Any questions or comments for Mr. Kluding? Bill, this committee started its work by a broad overview of what constitutes sustainability. And I think we have a classic example here of management practices or lack thereof that lead to complete unsustainability. Admittedly so, this bill is a first attempt, or a first step rather, at getting us back on track. And I may be naive enough to think that if we pass this bill, that there are enough good people like yourself out there that'll help, that will help drive an agenda that maybe we can show the federal forest land managers a better way. And very much appreciate your testimony and the fact that you've been here as much as anybody throughout the entire session here for this committee's work. Thank you very much. Any questions for Bill? Not seeing any. Thank you again, sir.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to testify today on Senate Bill 357? I'm not seeing anyone. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 357, and I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 719A. And Beth, would you please remind us what this bill is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 719A would modify the basis of the Oregon Sheep Commission's assessment. There is a revenue statement that's been issued, no fiscal impact.
All right. And committee members, if my memory serves me correctly, the testimony was that we moved from wool production to meat production, and it would help the industry if they moved to a per head type of fee arrangement. Are we ready to work this bill? I'm seeing the affirmative. I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen, please.
Chair Whitt, I move Senate Bill 719A to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves Senate Bill 719A to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be placed on the consent calendar. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I recommend that we don't put it on the consent calendar since it has to do with the fee, because there may be some discussion on the fee.
Okay. Understood. Yes. Vice Chair McEwen, would you be willing to withdraw your motion?
I will withdraw my motion.
Thank you very much. Much appreciated. With that, if I will recognize Vice Chair McEwen once
Chair
again,
Whitt,
please.
I move Senate Bill 719A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair,
is that sheepishly?
Sheepishly, yes.
Vice Chair McEwen moves Senate Bill 719A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on her motion? I'm not seeing any. Representative Krieger, you're going to get punished for those thoughts.
I know who the carrier is.
Don't look at me.
We all agree who the carrier is.
Absolutely. Yes.
Is there any further discussion? Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative Krieger.
Beaver, yes. We expect.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitfitt.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Esquivel. Aye.
Vice Chair
McKeon.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Oh, no.
You're not getting that, Mr. Chair.
Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. Who would like to?
I think Representative Clem said he'd like to.
Representative Clem would like to carry this bill. Thank you very much.
He had fretboard experience.
We will talk about Theta Xi at Washington State. Google it if you don't know.
And with that, I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 719A. Do we have anything for the good of the order? Folks, no meeting on Thursday. We will be meeting on Tuesday starting at 8:30 a.m. Tuesday, the next meeting.
Thank you.
And with that, you're welcome. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, committee members.